You pressed play on this podcast with the click of curiosity. It is another dimension, a dimension of mind, a dimension where nothing is sacred and everything is explainable. You're streaming into a land of both inside and outside, of things and ideas. You've just crossed over into the midside.
Welcome to the midside, where our superpower is awesomeness. We'll just disregard what happened yesterday or Sunday, depending on what when you're listening to this. When something that doesn't happen in 9 years happens, and that's the reason you lose, you just kind of shrug your shoulders and go, eh, sucks, wish it didn't happen that way. But it did. And that's all we'll be addressing about that. Joining me this week, via Skype, from somewhere near the House of Mouse, because he's not allowed to leave Florida and fly back into D.C. because there's lots of snow everywhere, Daniel T. Richards. Daniel, worst place to be stuck ever?
No. No.
I was being sarcastic, if you couldn't tell.
Yeah, I couldn't, because you're terrible at it. But no.
Someone from Boston is terrible at sarcasm? You take that back.
Is that
what?
A thing?
That's wicked dumb. I guess it's a thing. I don't know. Justin always confuses me with his sarcasm. I always go, oh, that's sarcasm. And he's like, no, I'm fucking serious. And he yells at me.
That's the problem with people from Massachusetts, from assholes. We think we're being clear, but usually we just always sound sarcastic.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, that game was wicked terrible. Are you serious? Is that sarcasm? No one can tell. So, Disney, stuck in Disney. I was here for a conference. That's right. Lawyers love Disney. And then Snowzilla happened, and they said, hey, fuck you and your plane. You're not going anywhere. Hold tight for several days. But now I'm actually not at Disney, as Justin alluded to. I moved to a much cheaper hotel because I work for a nonprofit. I don't want to waste all their money. So I'm at a travel lodge.
That doesn't sound like how nonprofits operate.
It's how I operate at nonprofits. We have some.
So you don't work for the Red Cross then, just to be clear.
Oh, I wish. Oh, the money I would make working for that nonprofit. My God.
For the audience, I'm going to explain that joke. The Red Cross wastes a lot of money. That's what I was saying.
Yeah, they actually use more than 80% of the money they take in on administrative support, which essentially means salary. Their CEO makes millions of dollars, which is ridiculous, because she doesn't bring in that much value. But so I'm in a travel lodge, and I feel like I already have AIDS from sitting on this bed.
Is travel lodge better or worse than Motel 6?
Ooh, worse. Yeah, the Motel 6 was more expensive.
Really? Yeah. How much are you paying there? Like 20 bucks?
With tax included, 42.
And Motel 6 was how much?
Like 52.
Wow, you couldn't go the extra $10?
I probably could have paid it myself. I just picked it because it's also really close to the airport and my flight is out at fucking 6 in the morning tomorrow. So I just wanted to get up as late as possible and get in a cab.
The only time you pay less for convenience.
Yeah, alas. Still love you, Florida. And I got to see Elliot, so hooray.
But not hooray for us because we don't have Elliot this week. Also joining us via Skype from the land of many strong trees, James Elias. James, I'd like to officially welcome you to the team, as you'll now be co-hosting every other episode, alternating with Elliot, as I just alluded to.
Yeah, thanks a lot, man. I'm doing pretty well. Yesterday was one big, or this weekend was one big day for me. It was like one, like 40 hour long day the whole weekend because I was in an airsoft op.
There's more than 24 hours in a day. There's 24 hours in a day.
Yeah. But like I was up for the whole, like the entire weekend. Like I missed one night of sleep for a big airsoft game.
So that's 48 hours. You said 40.
Well, I was up for 40 hours. Oh, it wasn't like the full 2 days. I'm sorry. I wasn't giving the full context.
That's right. Cut James for context.
I see dead people.
But yeah, it was actually, the airsoft game was on board a World War II ship that has been turned into a museum. And we got to airsoft on it.
Was this live streamed? That would be pretty cool to watch, I think.
Oh yeah, I'll give you a YouTube link to it. Yeah, of the one we did last year, and the knife kill in that video, if you watch it, is me.
Just to be clear, James did not actually kill anyone with a knife. I just want to be clear.
All this
I walked
stopped.
Up behind him with a plastic knife and slashed his shoulder, and then he dramatically screamed and fell to the ground.
By the way, I love how you've been on this podcast twice, and both times involved you almost killing someone with a weapon.
With a knife?
Yeah.
Right, and then yes. Even a third time when I wasn't on it, but you mentioned me, like, it's still knife. Yeah, James and knife, right.
So, okay. I'm wildly confused about airsofts and knives, but it did sort of spur a related thought, which was in paintball, can you get a paint knife?
And yeah, like, I think you slash someone with a paintbrush. I'm not kidding. Like, you paint.
I'm suddenly interested. Because all I picture is like real life James Bond Goldeneye, like Nintendo 64.
That's
where
what
it's
it
like
is.
All knives in the proximity.
Right.
That's what Airsoft was. James brought me to play Airsoft once, and that's exactly what I was doing. I was just, like, running around and being like, where is everyone? And that's what happened whenever I played GoldenEye. I'd run around the level and be like, where is everyone?
Wait, I brought you Airsofting?
Yeah, when I first moved out here in 2010.
Oh, shit. I totally forgot about that. Which field was it?
Like, I fucking know. It was the one, the like, level where, the level where you get odd job when you play the solo mission.
Right! Oh, okay, that explains why you were so short that day. Oh.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Oh. Short jokes. Were there any proximity mines? Can you lay, like, paint splatter bombs?
Well, there's just no, like, paint in Airsoft, but there are little bombs that, like, if you trip them, it'll fling a bunch of BBs into the air. Like, into your face. So that's kinda the same thing. And then there's an airsoft nuke where you drop like a 25 kilogram bag of 100,000 BBs and they just like sprinkle, they just like bounce everywhere. No, that's not a thing. I made that up.
What is soft about airsoft?
Absolutely nothing. I'm not sure.
It seems like it should be called air hurts the fuck out of my shoulder.
I think it's airsoft because they're not BB pellets, right? Because BB
pellets are made of... It's because they're plastic BBs instead of metal, I guess.
Right, that's what I figured. When I was there, that was my estimation, and I figured not to ask the question because people would think I was stupid.
Is there like Nerf softing?
I guess, but it would be really lame because they're such short range with the Nerf guns. With Airsoft, you can hit someone from 100 yards with a good enough gun.
Daniel was like the kid in PE when everyone wanted to play football. He's like, can we play Ultimate Frisbee?
No, I said, can we cancel PE and learn something? Is what
right.
I said. Yes.
You know, maybe if the government had taken that approach, we wouldn't have this first news story. Let's find out what it is in the news with Daniel T. Richards.
Well, I assure you, Mr. Listener, it really is that bad. These aren't harmless criminals. This isn't just a fad. Kid, there's consequences to what we say and what we do. While you're dancing like an idiot, they're looking up to you.
Good news, East Coast. Turns out all that snow you've been receiving is about to melt. Because last year was the hottest year on temperature, and it's only going up from here. At least that's according to NASA and NOAA and some people named Giss. Don't know who those folks are. Just
yes.
Kidding.
To be fair, Noah is not the guy from the Bible.
No, I wish it was.
National Ocean Air and Asshole Association.
Yes, much like GISS, who is the Goddard Institute for Space Studies. Yes, Goddard Institute for Space Studies, global warming. Correct.
By the way, Robert Goddard, do you know, that's named after Robert Goddard. Do you know where he's from?
Didn't he shoot some rockets into the air?
Yes, he's the first person to shoot a rocket into the air. Do you know where he's from?
Oh, well, it must be fucking Massachusetts.
That's correct. That is a Worcester first right there. Not even Boston. Worcester first.
He wasn't the first person to make rockets. He was the first one to invent liquid fuel for rockets.
So whatever, I'll take it.
Well, according to this conglomerate of alphabet soup, Earth's 2015 surface temperatures were the warmest since modern record keeping began in 1880. Globally, average temperatures in 2015 shattered the previous mark set in 2004 by a stunning 0.23 degrees Fahrenheit. for those of you keeping track, that's 0.13 degrees Celsius. Only once before in 1998 has the new record been greater than the old record by this much.
Okay. And it's still statistically insignificant, correct? We have no way of knowing this if this is relevant or not, correct?
Well, yes, because even folks at NASA, this is what they say. The planet's average surface temperature has risen about 1.8 degrees Fahrenheit since the late 19th century.
James, you had something to say? Yeah, you were a physics major, right?
Yeah, I mean, all these numbers are contextual. Like, I haven't read the actual study, so it's hard to know if this 0.24 is within the margin of error or not.
0.23, do not inflate it, it's 0.23.
Okay, so 0.23,
You were fucking numbers today. I was awake for 2 days, that's 40 hours. 0.24!
So yeah, anyway, and then in addition, the 0.24, or 2.23, sorry, Jesus. The 2.3.
Fired.
Yeah, my first day on the job, already screwing everything up. So, that 0.23, that in terms of global temperature and the actual warming of the Earth, that is supposed to be a big number, even though obviously it doesn't seem like much. Think about what they're doing. They're not taking the weather on any given day, or any given week in a certain part of the country, they're taking the temperature of the whole world, which is a very difficult number to obtain, by the way. Like, that's a really weird estimate to try and find. Like, that isn't even, when you take the temperature of the entire world, that isn't even like a well-defined number, really. It's
so they don't just stick a thermometer in the world's ass?
No, the world has no asshole temperature-wise. It has an asshole. It's called Bakersfield, California. But
you took my joke. I was going to say they didn't just stick it in the Middle East.
Oh, yeah, that's what I should have said.
I had Detroit.
Right. Oh.
Yeah.
Yeah, temperature-wise, there is no asshole of the world. Yeah.
There are many things about this story, not the least of which is that it's one of those things where James is right. The average temperature of the world, how meaningful is that? Overall, also, it's not something we would perceptually feel. Like when you actually put the numbers out on a scale that human beings would recognize, the essential the rate of increase just looks like a straight line because there is no way we can actually perceive that change.
Well, Daniel, you know this because you're out in DC. If you go to the Smithsonian, don't the Koch brothers have a display of the exactly what you're saying, like a giant graph of the global temperature?
What?
Yeah, I don't follow.
In the Smithsonian, the Koch brothers donated part of the museum. And in their part of the museum, on the wall, is a giant graph showing exactly what you just said, the average global temperature since they started taking it.
I didn't know that, but that's interesting.
You live in DC. How do I know that and you don't?
Okay, I bet I know things about, fucking California that you don't know.
No.
Maybe. I don't know. I don't visit these goddamn propaganda museums. It's ridiculous. I don't believe anything that's said in there. And the other thing is that, one of my favorite sites, which is whatsupwithit.com. That's WATTS, upwiththat.com. There's global warming skeptics, but they're mostly scientists, by the way. It's not just some crackpot in his basement cooking meth on the side. They look at
Walter White was a scientist.
So Daniel, the thing about these NASA numbers is that they're the actual temperature readings that they receive, and then NASA puts them through this series of calculations and then adjusts all of the actual temperature readings to what they quote unquote should have read.
According to The Martian, their adjustment mechanism is Donald Glover.
Yes. Exactly.
They just have that Asperger's-y guy cranking away on all of those numbers.
Yeah, and he just randomly shows up even though there's no setup or resolution for his character being involved. Yes.
Oh, come on. Give that movie a break. That was my favorite movie of last year, by the way.
It was a fine movie. It was a fine movie. Too much Matt Damon backsack. But other than that, it was a fine movie. But, so, part of this is, I don't take anything NAST has to say about this seriously because they don't even take their own temperature measurements seriously. They take their temperature measurements and they go, well, we're going to run them through this set of data that we cooked up, and oh, suddenly look, the temperatures are higher. It's magic.
You know who should do this instead of NASA? SpaceX.
Yeah, seriously.
Well, they'd be much better at it, certainly. But the satellite temperature, so these are all surface temperature data, by the way, which is why it has to be adjusted for things like, oh, it was 20 feet from a space heater, or this one was on a piece of concrete, right. Or this one was dipped in a block of ice by accident. The satellite temperature readings show absolutely none of this. None of it at all. The satellite temperature data show, one, that we've had like a 15 or 16 year pause in any warming whatsoever, and that even before that, the temperatures weren't that much warmer than quote-unquote records we've had in the late 19th century. So, what's really going on here? And the one other thing I want to say about this, by the way, because you actually look at the study and read it, you know, these claims, by the way, NASA NOAA analysis reveal record-shattering global warm temperatures. If you read them, it says, we have about a 20% certainty that that was the hottest year on record. 20% certainty? Really? So there's an 80% chance you were fucking wrong?
Wow, so okay. It's like the TV weatherman.
Yes, indeed.
The thing so I love all, about
all this is nonsense.
Right, and the thing I love about it is all these environmentalists, they know this is nonsense, yet they continue to push their agendas. Talking about California and all the things you know about it. Daniel, did you know they send free LED light bulbs to residents of California?
What? I gotta get me one of those.
Shitting me?
I come home one day and I have a box from Anaheim Public Utilities and I flip it over and it says, you know, to the resident of apartment blah 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 in Anaheim. I'm not gonna say my address on air because you people who listen might be weird. and then it's two LED light bulbs for free. I didn't ask for it.
You just said the wrong word there, sir.
Well, yeah, that's what I was going to get to next. It says on the front of it, save $144 per light bulb, which makes no sense to me because that's more than my utility bill for a month, my electric bill for a month. So they're telling me per light bulb, I can save 2 months. So I can save 4 months utility bill.
Maybe it's over the life of the light bulb.
That's exactly what it is. So it's deceptive. So if you actually factor in taxes, I overpaid for two light bulbs that I didn't want.
Right. Yeah. Because you could have invested that money and put it into something better. Yeah.
Oh, that's hilarious. The other hilarious part of this is that some company has now invented an incandescent light bulb that is way, like 1,000 times more energy efficient, lasts longer, and will be cheaper than LED light bulbs. And it's fucking illegal.
Because
incandescent light bulbs are illegal. So, we'll never see it. So, thank you government for protecting us.
We'll never see it because they won't let us turn the light on with it.
Because it'll be too dark to see it. Because they never, you turn the light on, you wait 75 minutes for it to get bright. But thank you, government, for protecting us from all measures of things, including something you need an extra long tape measure for. That's what she said. A giant snow penis. This Mashable article starts out, by now you've probably heard about the large snow penis that sent the town of Gothenburg, Sweden into a tizzy.
I love how it starts like that. Like, yes, we've all heard of the giant snow penis in Gothenburg, Sweden. Of course.
Of course. We're all familiar of the snow relief of the giant penis.
Everyone's tired of that old yarn. Yes. After many complaints, park authorities managed to remove the penis etching with the help of an abnormally long brush. The removal inspired the creation of a Facebook group petitioning the return of the snow penis, which more than 3,000 people joined. I suppose that's probably a third or more of the country of Sweden's population. So, well, we're bringing you very important updates, as Mashable, regarding the snow penis. It's back and bigger than ever.
I love the title. I love the title of this article.
A translation of Emilian Sava, one of the town officials who assisted in the original removal, in the paper The Local, says, quote, I want to say that I am sincerely sorry to see that this many people missed the snow penis. Our thought was to give a hand to the city council. Who stand helpless and not to try to stop the freedom of art.
This is a shitty translation.
Yeah, for did this... he just use the word art in association with a penis etched into the ground?
But, to must... be fair, to be fair, that's better than everything in LACMA.
It is. I saw the picture of it, and yeah, it is.
I love in LACMA how they advertise the rain room. Like it's a big fucking deal. I guess it's because in LA and they never see rain, all of us are going, this is the same experience as having an umbrella.
Was it you I ranted to that when I first heard about that?
Yeah, a room where water is falling from the ceiling, but where you walk, there is no water.
That's what they gave you. That's the thing. It's so ridiculous.
It's such an umbrella experience without the umbrella. Oh, God. God, I'd want to jizz from my giant snow penis over this amazing experience.
I mean, you cannot create a better example of naturalistic art.
Yes, and even shitty naturalistic art. There is better naturalistic art than that nonsense. Okay, anyway. The quote continues, for this I want to apologize, meaning for stifling the freedom of art. To recreate the snow penis in Valgraven, another area of Gothenburg, is risky.
Yes.
Is risky. But we are thinking about you, and at this moment I am trying to figure out the best way to recreate a big and lovely snow penis in the memory of the old one. I want to know how much of this is literal and how much is really fucked up translation. Please offer suggestions and we will do our best to make this happen.
I think what really happened
here- To make
the
new snow penis come to our city.
I think what really happened here was they were like, so we could go to IKEA again, or we could bring the giant snow penis back.
We have nothing better to do. Do you want to eat some meatballs?
It's all there is out there. It's just
they
IKEA
go to IKEA
penis.
To eat the meatballs.
Yes. There's a picture of the giant snow penis, and the one thing I have to say is, why do people draw penises like this? This isn't even a good representation of a penis. Like,
wait,
whose balls
look
like that?
Your balls don't look like that?
I mean, clearly one is bigger than the other, and that makes sense. That's sort of anatomically correct.
That's how you know a dude drew it and not a woman.
But seriously, if your penis looks like this, see a physician. This is not good.
Who does this anyway? Like, I remember one time I was like walking on Laguna, like near Laguna on like the street there, and you could see down onto the beach, and there were these, like, college girls there, and they're drawing in the sand. And I'm like, are they drawing a penis? Like, who does that? Who, like, goes to the beach and is like, you know what? I'm going to draw a penis.
Well, I don't know. People who desperately love the penis.
The balls are like an infinity symbol, I noticed.
Oh, it's so deep. Penis.
I mean,
forever.
It's art. It's art. Yeah, it's the infinite, eternal snow penis.
I love the comments from the locals posting positive comments after the apology from the city official. Everything is forgiven. Everything is forgotten. A magnificent piece.
I like, no one's like acknowledging or maybe no one's acknowledging that this is a joke. Like, or maybe it's not. Maybe it's just like, I want to express my artistic, thoughts by drawing this infinite snow penis. This is great.
I think that's the added level to this story, right? So first of all, like James just said, this is obviously like a prank someone pulled, and like they're taking this seriously. And then the second thing is, what brought this back was 3,000 people joined a group on Facebook.
My God, if we start doing everything that is associated with 3,000 people joining a group, oh, there are going to be so many people raped. One member wrote a simple but powerful quote, "Move to tears, more snow penises for the people."
What?
Isn't that adorable? The other element of this story that I want to point out is, one, this would never happen in America, because if you drew a penis, it would be automatically, we need a safe space, and I feel metaphorically raped by the giant snow penis, and look at this symbol of masculine, higher, heteronormative oppression, et cetera, and it would be fucking, there'd be marches and candlelight vigils, and there'd be take back the skating rink, commemorative whatever. So only in Sweden could this go on, where the people aren't yet retarded. Or maybe they are. Did you know that in Britain, this is not a snow penis story, but a regular sort of graffiti penis story, There is a guy known as Wanksy.
But we can only talk about graffiti penises. We don't talk about real penises.
Right. No, that would be disgusting. How dare we? There's a guy calling himself not Banksy, but Wanksy, who is drawing or spray painting penises around potholes in London because the city won't fix potholes right away, sometimes for years. But if you draw a penis around it, it becomes obscene and they have to fix it immediately. But isn't that genius?
Yeah, he's a better artist than Banksy.
That's true. Yeah, fuck Banksy and fuck Hillary Clinton. That's my transition for this story.
And fuck Donald Trump.
And fuck Donald Trump. Right in the Wanksy. USA Today, we're reporting this story because...
Do you think if Donald Trump stood in the middle of a giant snow penis in Sweden and shot someone, people would still support him?
I'm gonna ponder that while I read this news story, because I want to get through this news story. So the USA Today had an article about how campaigns are using social media. This one is titled, Clinton Media Campaign Follows BuzzFeed Model, which is probably why it feels so icky. Quote, Hillary Clinton's campaign looks like a media startup. The Democratic frontrunner has a staff of dozens producing original content, including byline news stories and professional video, all managed by an audience development team, a model similar to digital news pioneers. Okay, I'm going to say that again because the article does actually say digital news pioneers, BuzzFeed or Vox. Yes, seriously. I'm not exactly sure what they do is news so much as generate advertising revenue.
And yeah, I mean, again. Vox as well. Like, I can kind of see an argument for BuzzFeed because it's like now everyone does like the list that BuzzFeed does, but Vox.
Listicles.
Yeah.
Yeah. Listicle sounds like it's something that goes along with the giant snow penis.
I was going to make that joke.
But you didn't. So, Hillary Clinton maintains a blog called The Feed, which is, you know, the epitome of originality. And it's anchored by 5 full-time writers. It pumps out articles, interactive trivia quizzes, GIFs of Clinton's late-night show appearances, and other content designed to engage supporters and core potential voters across social media channels. And then they list social media channels as if at this point we are unaware what they are, Facebook, Twitter, and Snapchat. So, what say you, gentlemen? Have you been wooed by the BuzzFeed-esque Clinton machine?
I didn't even know this existed. Do people actually read the feed? Is that what this is?
Yeah, right. I'm like, I wouldn't even read the feed for a politician I liked if I even liked a politician.
Yeah, I don't understand that. Like, I'm not that bought into politics in general. Like, it's important and I'm going to vote, but I don't want to sit there and read the content generated by these people. They're narcissistic assholes all.
Is Tom Brady running yet?
No.
Then I'm not going to vote.
Like, yeah, what sort of content do these people, like, write? Like, what would a headline look like from this? Like, Hillary Clinton lies again. You won't believe how clever she is.
No, here's an actual real life example, which is stupider than that example, surprisingly, which is take the Trump or not Trump quiz. Even if you get every answer right, America still loses.
And isn't there one like, which Hillary Clinton haircut are you? And it's like, man eater, lesbian.
Socialist dyke.
Yeah.
Yeah. No, I don't think it's any of those.
Hippie at Wellesley.
5 vintage photos that tell the story of how Bill and Hillary Clinton fell in love. And then he got a BJ from a fat intern.
Oh, I thought that was real until the second part.
It was real until the second part. I made up the second part, but the first part was real. The article goes on, though, to discuss the difference between Hillary and Trump. Trump uses social media more like he is an angry Unabomber sending out a manifesto.
Accurate.
He basically just tweets out every fucking thing that comes to his mind. The man has tweeted 5,000 times since June, and generated nearly 85 million interactions for his campaign.
To be fair to Trump, that's impressive because I thought the only people capable of doing that were teenage girls.
Yes. Yes, he is rivaling, Betsy the psychopath obsessed with kittens and Ryan Gosling.
Which actually, to be fair, this makes him more of a woman than Hillary Clinton.
Doesn't take
wow,
much.
You really liked that joke.
I did.
Yes. So yeah, he's created 85 million interactions on his campaign accounts. Sanders comes in second with 34.6 million and Clinton at 31 million. I'm pretty sure Sanders' digital strategy is, what the hell is email? So.
Well, I was gonna say, is Bernie Sanders like the operator of the internet? So like when old people pick up their phone, they're like, how do I dial this thing? And they accidentally dial the operator. So when they try to get on social media to learn about Bernie Sanders' campaign, they learn about Bernie Sanders' campaign.
Bernie Sanders is still sending out campaign memos on mimeograph paper, so. Okay, that was really funny to anyone who knows what mimeograph paper is. But moving on, is any of this going to work is my question. This is the – so like fucking Rand Paul. Rand Paul's campaign is buying Snapchat advertising. Do they honestly think that people on Snapchat are going to vote one at all and two for Rand Paul?
Where is the Snapchat advertising taking place?
Well, it's like custom filters or it's like sponsored stories.
Oh, okay. That's what I thought.
Yeah.
The problem
but,
with that is you don't have to click on the story if you don't want to. Like, I did not click on the ESPN story today because I don't want to be depressed.
Yes. Yes, indeed. Or misinformed. I don't understand, but, you know, that to me is the epitome of hubris. But even this stuff, the BuzzFeed-esque stuff, the tweeting out a million things, are those what's going to turn the election in one of these candidates' favors? If Trump never tweeted anything, would he still be leading by a billion percent?
I don't think it's going to turn the election, but like, it's part of Trump's whole gimmick, right? So I see a difference between Hillary and Trump here. Hillary is sort of just trying to jump on the train, right? She saw what Barack Obama did and she's trying to like up that and up the ante. It's sort of like when a team wins the Super Bowl and then everybody else starts trying to do the same strategy, but they can't do it as well because they didn't design their whole organization based upon that and they don't have the players. But with Trump, it's sort of who Trump is. Like, he's the kind of person who gets on Twitter and just spouts random nonsense. I mean, isn't that why Ann Coulter loves him? Because that's the same way she uses Twitter?
Kindred spirits.
They are.
Yeah, it's, yes. It's I'd hate to use this word when referring to Donald Trump, but it's more integrated into who he is.
It's so true. Say what you will about Donald Trump, he is integrated.
Well, yeah, let's not go that far. His
Well, no, you showed me a story today, James, where he's totally not integrated, right?
Yeah, that's right. I mean, it depends on how you look at integrated, but basically, he went on CBS earlier this week, or rather last week, and just straight up said, I'm going to repeal Obamacare and replace it with single-payer healthcare, socialized medicine. And the guy interviewing him, is his eyes suddenly light up, just like, oh, shit, like, this is, like, this guy can't get any funnier. And he's like, wait, so the government pays? Like, he's like, he had to be clear on this, like, so the government pays, like, you're personally not gonna, like, I don't know what he was thinking, like, single payer and, like, Donald Trump is gonna be that payer. But, like, no, yeah, the government pays. So, congratulations, Republicans. You're getting what you deserve. Unfortunately, we're getting it too.
That's why I'm saying he's not integrated. Like, he's supposed to be this right-wing messiah, and then all of a sudden he's like, yeah, socialism.
Yeah. Gee biscuits.
He's so disintegrated, his hair's not even integrated with his scalp. Oh, that was a long way for that joke. But actually, I attended a conference this weekend hosted by my employer. And one of the more interesting panels was on healthcare and federalism. And the data, by the way, not that I'm advocating for this, I thought it was fascinating, shows that if the United States actually went to a 100% single-payer system, we would save money on the amount we spend on fucking healthcare right now. Because the United States government spends a good $1 billion on healthcare, and with the addition of Obamacare on top of that, we are going to be the country in the world that spends the most on healthcare. And a single-payer system would actually be cheaper. Now, the quality of healthcare would also dramatically decrease, and more people would die, and we would have death panels, and all the old people would be fucked over. we'd spend less money. So I suppose that's Donald Trump's retarded argument. It's not a good one, but it's a fascinating one.
And let's be fair, right? We have another article here that shows that there's actually dissension within the Republican Party here over Donald Trump, right? And I included this because I thought it was interesting that, well, I don't want to say the Republican Party. I want to say the right-wing side. I thought it was interesting to see the ways that the left and right are approaching this differently. So what's this other article, Daniel?
Oh, I have no idea. There's another article?
Yeah, do you not see the / RNC disinvites National Review as debate partner?
Oh, no, I didn't.
James, you sent this article.
Yeah, right. So yeah, this is the one I sent in. So yeah, basically, the National Review is a big, Republican publication, started with William F. Buckley way back when. That's a date, by the way, in the 20th century.
Right there in the outline.
So basically, one writer for the National Review, criticized Trump immensely, and he said he is the single greatest threat to the Republican Party in the long run. Some kind of very strong wording such as that. And he was, disinvited from being a debate host for the RNC debate. This isn't that crazy now that I think about it, because basically he's going to be a debate host and they want someone who's a little bit more, neutral.
Unbiased, yeah.
Yeah, but they haven't had a problem with, you know, biased, moderators in the past with those, you know, CNN debates where it's just like, or not the CNN debates. What was it that they stopped? CNBC? CNBC, where it's just like the questions basically reduced down to like, you know, Mr. Cruz, he called you an asshole. What do you think of that? Like, that was the question. Like,
do you think he's a douche?
Like, yeah, right. Like, that's the way we're going to frame our political discussion. But, I find it very disheartening that the Republican Party is going along with Trump to the extent that they are. And then when they do go against him, it's people like, you know, Nikki Haley, who disagrees with him for all the wrong reasons, basically. It's like, oh, I know he completely, you know, has no opinions on anything, but let me actually, let me go after him for the opinions he does actually have. Like, yeah. Trump is such a joke. I actually went to his website just to see what would happen. And
there was a pop-up ad for hair plugs.
Yeah. I make a point of this to look at every, or not every candidate, but a candidate's, you know, positions. And here, if you go under the positions tab, there are no more than 5 positions under Donald. I'm serious. There's 5. Number 1, U.S.-China trade reform. Number 2, Veterans Administration reforms. Tax reform. Second Amendment rights and immigration reform. So all of these are just very, very highly delimited issues that Donald Trump has actually ventured an opinion on. And only those 5, that's it.
It's still less disturbing than Bernie Sanders' website and his positions. I went to that and I read down and I was like, as I kept scrolling down, I was like, this gets more and more delusional. Like, has anyone actually read this far?
Yeah, it was just a picture of Bernie Sanders' head on a porn star's body doing this guy in the rear end, and the guy's face, it just said rich people. That was his position on taxation.
That's actually more coherent than his positions as written.
We're gonna fuck the rich people.
As the page goes on, there's just more capital letters and spaces, and then eventually it's just like his head fell over onto the keyboard, and it's just repeating ZLQNP over and over again. Yeah, that's fun. So Trump, here's the thing. 2 things about Trump. 1, conservatives have no one to blame for Trump except themselves. They fuck themselves over for being horribly ineffective at their jobs for years and years and years. People like John Boehner and Mitch McConnell and John McCain, Mitt Romney, all people who got fucking nothing accomplished when they had a chance. Absolutely nothing. In fact, they lost every major political battle of the past 20 years. Not
Bob
making
Dole.
That up.
Bob Dole.
Bob Dole. Bob Dole lost too. And then they're surprised when a guy who's not conservative but who tells people, you know what, fuck the conservatives, I'll fight for you. Even if I'll do stupid shit, it'll be stupid shit for you. They're shocked. And they keep going, well, he's not a conservative. He's not a conservative. The people don't care that he's a conservative. They want their piece of the pie. They want someone to fight for them. They've accepted that the big government system is going to be there. They just want it to finally work for them in some way. Now, that is a fairly disgusting position, but I absolutely understand where it's coming from. It's coming from the fact that Republicans have said, screw you, constituents, for 20-plus years now, and this is the end of the road for them. This is it. The Republican Party is at a precipice, and at the other, that one side with Trump means that the Republican Party is going down like the fucking Titanic. So.
And to be fair.
Thanks a lot, John Boehner.
To be fair, there's something endearing about someone who says, I'll do stupid shit for you.
It at least feels honest. I don't know if it is honest, but it feels honest.
It feels honest, and you want to see just how stupid of shit they'll do.
It's sort of like a BJ from a tranny, right? You're like, well, it feels good, but he has a penis and boobs. So, I don't know. It's weird. It's a weird. We live in a weird political age.
Not just a weird political age.
Oh, we live in a weird everything. A transition here into the story I don't understand.
That was the transition.
And I'm going to throw it over to Justin because I have no idea what this story is about, who it is involves, or what the hell we're doing talking about it, although it has a bizarre image at the top. So, yeah.
That was the transition. The point is, so this story I found is by, it's an essay by the star of Girl Meets World, which is the spinoff of Boy Meets World, Rowan Blanchard, and she's come out as sort of a spokesperson for her generation and people her age. And I included this story, it's called Sorry Not Sorry, How I Quit Apologizing for Existing, because just based upon that title alone, it sounds like we would like it, right? That sounds like a good thing. That sounds very objectivist.
If we're judging a book by its title, then yes.
Yes, but then you read it, and it's like super muddled, and somehow it's social justice. So I just found this interesting because I think it shows how mixed the messages the younger generation is receiving. And how mixed the messages we give in our society are.
Would you like me to read the messages then? Is that sort of?
Yeah, that's your job.
That's my job.
That's what I not pay you for.
Okay. So she has like 95 rambling paragraphs at the beginning, which I'm not going to read. But she essentially comes down to this. Here are three things that have helped me trust myself enough to know that I don't always have to say sorry for myself. Ready? Number one. What seems like the total end of the world, while valid, is not usually the end of the world in a week. That sentence is terrible, but
it's like if Immanuel Kant were like a 16-year-old girl. Like that's what that would look like.
She goes on to say, and what seems like the total end of the world to you, while valid, is not necessarily the end of the world to the other person involved in the situation. And then she quotes the Beatles. So.
Yeah, that, I didn't know what the hell was going on in that one.
What if it's actually the apocalypse though?
Can you
identify it?
It's valid though.
It is valid. Justin, do you want to translate this in some way?
No, I think you're, okay. I think you're pretty accurately. I mean, look. This is the thing that I'm talking about is so, like, contradictory about it. Like, on one hand, yeah, it's good to have perspective and be like, it's not the end of the world. But then somehow she includes social constructivism in here, and I'm just like, what?
Number two, which was so important that it had to be written in all capital letters. Thank you, Bernie. Realize that you cannot live up to anyone or anything. What? You can only do the best you, not the, quote, be you, and have yourself figured out and know everything about the world you, but the you who knows that your role models, icons, and inspirations are not meant to make you feel bad that you cannot be like them, comma, like, comma. Italization. I must get into an Ivy League college and win a Grammy/Oscar/Presidential Medal of Freedom by the time I am 8. No, no matter who you are, they still had to go through their, quote, middle, and they made it through, so you can too. Okay.
Again, it's like super contradictory, right? Like, on one hand, it's like, yeah, live up to your own standards, but then all of a sudden, role models are a bad thing, and they make you feel bad? Like, this is something we talk about all the time when we talk about, like, Tom Brady. I never look at Tom Brady or look at anyone great and be like, they make me feel bad about myself. I look at them and I say, oh, wow, they're inspirational.
Yes, yes, very
it's,
good.
It's so mixed message, so weird. It's so interesting.
I would like to demonstrate the decline in education and thinking by putting this journal next to the journals of Frederick Douglass.
Just having he was a slave who was denied education.
Exactly. And then just having us all fucking weep.
And he's so much better off as a result.
Exactly. Oh, if only we could enslave everyone. Vote Trump 2016.
So basically dudes on the dock that explain to you what a certain word means, that's how Frederick Douglass learned English, by the way, is better than our public schools now.
So longshoremen.
Right. That's what I meant. Yeah.
Individual words.
Right. Yes. Yeah, he'd point at the name of the ship, he'd say, "What's that say?" And they'd look at him funny and say, you know, it says the mermaid or, you know, whatever. And then they'd walk away. That's how we learned English.
Better than our educational system in America right now.
To be fair, that's pretty much how I taught myself how to read well, where whenever we went on a road trip, I just read the signs on the side of the road. So that I endorse that method.
Huh. Yes. No wonder you love McDonald's. It's weird. Okay. Finally, her final.
Hey, I am clean since middle of December. I have not had fast food.
Wow. Wow, I can't imagine the shaking.
Help, I don't know what to eat.
Her final, I guess I'll call it a point, is understand that you need to be able to be alone and know that you are enough for yourself. And she gives two ways that helped her realize that, one of which was take pictures of yourself however you feel comfortable, and instead of looking at the first thing you hate about your appearance, find the first thing you like. Okay. Now the second was, in order to quit apologizing to other people, you must first and foremost learn to stop apologizing for being yourself to yourself. Form a camaraderie between the versions of yourself that you can trust wholeheartedly to be there to pick you up when you are down. I don't even know how to read the rest of the sentence. That's how poor it is. Anyway.
I don't think you need to read the rest of the sentence. I mean,
okay.
This is like what I find so bizarre and so interesting about this article is, like, the point she makes, point number three, is good. Like, yeah, you know, be comfortable with yourself. But then it turns into this weird shit of, like, apologizing to yourself for existing. Have you ever apologized to yourself for existing?
I don't do that, but I've met people who definitely do.
What does that look like? How does that happen?
It never comes in the form of someone actually saying, I'm really sorry, like, I was here in front of you today. But, like, the tone of their voice somehow, like, conveys it. It's anyone who says, like, sorry for things that they ought not to be sorry for. Like, let's see, I'm trying to think of an example here, like.
Anything Woody Allen has ever said?
I don't really get that reference. There was this girl I knew.
Where's
in
Elliot?
Physics.
Bring him back.
I'm fired.
We need a gay.
There's this girl in my physics classes at USC who, like, she'd raise her hand and offer maybe a suggestion on how to solve the problem. And then when it was wrong, she said, oh, I'm sorry. But, like, she said it in a way where it's like, I'm really sorry, like, I wasted our time in class with me attempting to participate. Like, it was, and whenever she said something like that, I would look her dead in the eye and say, I forgive you. Like, in a really serious voice. But, like, I did, and
oh
I meant
God.
To be kind of like a dick about it, and like, come on, you don't have to apologize for everything, you dumb bitch. But, like, You know what I'll say though is that this article, even though it's like kind of silly, it kind of offered me like a picture into the mind of how someone like that is, and I kind of regret being such a dick to that girl because like now I kind of get it. Like they're really messed up and they're trying to fix their low self-esteem and yeah, like it's a pitiable thing, not something to be made fun of.
Yeah. I think she needs a giant snow penis.
That's what she needs. That's patriarchal. Mm-hmm. All woman needs is penis.
Giant snow penis.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Or it's what we all need. a little bit of good art, which is what the snow penis is, right?
Oh, yeah.
So let's talk about some more good art, maybe. I don't know. We'll see what James's review here is. In The Hopeful Romantic with JML. So we're going to start this segment off with a couple of reviews. James is going to review 13 Hours to start here. This is the movie starring John
Krasinski.
Yeah, he got really jacked for this and then argued with some ESPN hosts when promoting this because they started talking shit about the Patriots. So go ahead, James.
Oh, so John Krasinski is a Patriots fan.
He is also from Massachusetts, which is why he's a douchey leftist friend of Matt Damon and Ben Affleck.
Wow, that's a surprise. And I'm pronouncing his name wrong. It's Krasniski.
Who cares? Justin, Polish people in their last name.
Right, yeah. Justin, let's pronounce this for me.
No, you're good.
Krasinski.
Krasinski. Okay, very good. So yeah, so John Krasinski, the dude from The Office, Jim from The Office, plays Jack Silva, who's a contractor. He used to be a Navy SEAL, but now he works for one of these private military contracting firms. It's basically Blackwater, only not Blackwater, if you ever heard of them. So, this is an event that actually happened, by the way. So first I'll remind you of the event. In Benghazi, Libya, a U.S. diplomatic outpost was attacked by a group of 100-odd irregulars with AK-47s and rocket launchers and all sorts of ghetto-ass weapons from Russia. And they attacked the U.S. diplomatic outpost and seized ambassador Chris Stevens, and who eventually died from smoke inhalation because when they were attacking the outpost, his security detail, which was a whole two people, basically barricaded themselves in a safe room, and the barbarians used diesel fuel to try and smoke them out. Well, the two security men actually survived. The ambassador, though, died of smoke inhalation and was captured by the jihadists. Jack Silva and, six other of these contractors, even though it was not their job to do so, went into battle, and were able to rescue the security staff of the outpost, brought them back to the CIA base that was nearby, a secret CIA base nearby, which was then subsequently attacked by the giant group of men. These six dudes with just rifles, defended the CIA outpost, and even though they got absolutely no support, no air support, no military, none of the force of the United States at all was brought to bear against the attack. And so, and later, this attack was cast by the Obama administration, you may remember this part, as a protest against the film Innocence of Muslims. And so the controversy here is that Hillary Clinton, especially, and the rest of the Obama administration wanted to make it look like the war on terror was not still going on. So they cast this as though it were just a protest against this film that lampoons Islam. And so as a result, they didn't want to make it look like the war was still going on. So they didn't send any military support. In fact, two security guards were up on the roof shooting an infrared laser at targets because they thought that they were about to get air support, and they didn't. Basically is this laser system that shows the plane where to shoot, basically. And because they were up on the roof shooting these lasers, they themselves got shot by the terrorists. So because they thought they were getting air support and it never came. So basically this is the death of many American citizens that are directly on the hands of the Obama administration. It didn't have to be. And the story basically never got told. So, at the very least, we appreciate that Michael Bay made this movie to bring this issue to light. The movie itself, pretty good. I'm not the best. It can't be a romantic film because it's just kind of a depiction of what actually happened. They jazzed it up a little bit and the action was very good. It's kind of what you'd expect from a Michael Bay movie where like it's very rough cut. You can't always tell what the hell is going on. There weren't any giant robots in it though, but you know what? I liked this. Michael Bay, I think he did a good job overall. There were certain things in it that kind of made me chuckle. Like there's a scene where they suddenly cut to one of the operator's faces. With, like, it's just an extreme close-up of his face, and he just says, get out of the fucking road. And it was, like, during a car chase scene, and, it, like, that little shot had made no sense in the overall, like, action scene. It's, there's sort of Michael Bay things in there that are kind of funny, but overall, really good. Really likable characters, and you see how amazing it is what these guys actually did. Basically, what happened is yeah, so yeah, really good. They depict the CIA director at the base. His name was Bob. And I'm not kidding. That's all we know of his name because he's a CIA operative. They made the CIA guy look terrible because he basically told these six contractors not to go help the diplomatic outpost because it wasn't their place to do so. And finally, what happens is the guy in charge of the six contractors, he finally just makes the decision to disobey orders and go rescue them. But they came in too late to rescue the ambassador.
Well, James, I was already going to see this film yesterday when I got home from Florida. But your review has made me want to see it even more. And I'm going to make an effort, I think, to see it this week. So it didn't do particularly well at the box office, so.
The fact that it's naturalistic and by Michael Bay made you want to see it?
Yes, yes. It's not, I mean, it's a thing where it's like.
Doesn't it kind of have to be naturalistic? Cause it's like actual did things that did actually happen?
No, something that's based on reality can be romanticized.
Right. Well, I'm not an expert enough to tell you whether it was romanticized or not.
All right, well, Daniel, we'll leave that hanging, and you can come back and report when James isn't here.
Yes, I'm the expert here, yes, on this. What I would say is that there is also something that's sort of like a dramatized documentary.
Yeah.
Which is sort of neither naturalistic or romantic. I mean, you have to make choices in depicting what happens. But really, it's just a different kind of way of telling a news story.
Right. Well, in this sense, there was some definite, I don't know if it's romantic because I'm not an expert at that, but a very symbolic imagery. For example, one of the prominent Islamic fighters in the movie, you see him in almost every scene where the Islamists are attacking. He is a big red shirt with a star and crescent on it. Like, as if to say, like, the attackers, they are Muslim. Like, this, you see him in the front every time. Like, this dude with this star and crescent shirt.
Yeah, there's and the then, Michael Bay I know and love.
Yeah, where he hits you over the head with images, you mean?
Yeah. This is the bad guy!
Yeah. And then here's another one that you'll appreciate is he shows the Islamic fighters praying in the morning and you know, they're, you know, getting down and hitting their heads on the ground or whatever it is they do. And their AK-47 rifles are just right there. Like right, it shows them praying and then it pans over to, and there's their AKs right there ready to shoot up Americans. Another image, it shows the American flag getting shot up by the, it shows there's a scene where a bunch of the fighters shoot an American flag up. And the final scene, very powerful. It ends on a note that's very consonant with how the book, or rather how the movie ends. And the final shot is an American flag submerged in a pool of dirty water.
Yeah, see, that's not naturalistic. That's the Michael Bay. That's Michael Bay. I would be very surprised if Michael Bay was naturalistic.
Okay. Are you a fan of Michael Bay?
What?
Justin, do you like Michael Bay? I'm wondering, like, yeah, do you like him?
I feel like this is a trap question.
No.
Yes, Michael Bay. I mean, Michael Bay.
He's Michael Bay. Like, he's all right. He's Michael Bay. Like, you just have to take him for what he is. Like, there's not a lot of depth, but like, okay, shit looks
okay. Yeah, they're fun. Right, yeah. But this, I mean, there was some depth to this one.
Maybe. Yeah. But we'll let Daniel be the judge of that.
Okay.
It's like being a fan of Hershey's chocolate.
Right.
Right, exactly.
Yeah.
Alright.
Alright.
So I want to review something here, and we don't talk a lot about music on this podcast, but I would like to do that because a pop punk band released a song that I thought was really pretty incredible, pretty amazing, and I put it on the outline, and I was hoping you guys would listen to it and you guys would give your thoughts on having heard it. But I specifically wanted to point out the second verse because I thought the lyrics were really, really good to the second verse. So I just want to read those. The second verse says, "Let's get back to the basics and take it back to the basement where I heard Born to Run for the first time. And I stared at my dad in amazement. He said, 'Son, don't stop chasing great and keep pounding the pavement.' So I'd much rather die trying to make something sacred than live as another YouTube sensation. 'Cause I hate that they're famous for being something they're not, while I'm too hung up on the things I don't have to appreciate what I've got." And the link to the song will be in the outline, so you should definitely check it out. But I just thought this song was, I mean, this is to me what a romantic song is. And what I mean by that is it essentializes an idea and it portrays it through the music. So the music is, it works, it's integrated with the lyrics and it's very emotive. Did you guys listen to this and have any impressions of the song?
I mean, my impression, so I only listened to it once.
Yeah, I've listened to this song like on repeat constantly. Like I'm like getting ready in the morning. I just keep hitting repeat on YouTube. So
this is more of a personal thing for me than it is an objective analysis. But in my life, I've always been more so a fan of melody, harmony, rhythm, and that sort of integrated musicality as opposed to lyrics. Like most songs that I listened to growing up, I can hum melodies and harmonies to, but if someone says, "Oh, the lyrics say this," or someone pointed out to me once that one of my favorite songs ever was about God. I was like, "It is?" Like, yeah, it's a bunch of lyrics about worshiping God. I was like, "Really? Huh, I never paid attention to that." So for me, the lyrics are good in this song, but I thought the melody was interesting and the harmony was interesting. I'm not a huge fan of the singer, but I don't know. I see why you like it. I see why you would be drawn to this kind of thing. So.
I won't take that as an insult.
It's James, not!
I know, I was kidding. James, do you have any impressions you want to share? I mean, give me your impression of Barack Obama right now. I mean, just of the song.
Let me be clear.
Everything I'm about to say is a lie. Yeah, let's be clear. Right, yeah, that's the go-to line whenever someone does an impression of Obama. Let's be clear. Okay. So I really like the lyrics, kind of opposite of Daniel. I'm a very much lyrics-oriented. If I like the lyrics of a song, the rest of it kind of springs to life for me. This is especially true for, I don't know if you guys have heard, Alex Prisk. You know, guys know Alex Prisk?
Yeah,
Nigh Horizon. Like, his songs really do that for me. I wasn't too big on the sound when I started it. But it really grew on me. So I really like the lyrics. So we'll see if this song grows on me. I don't like the musicality of it. I tend to like metal type songs that are just really aggressive sounding and reflect, you know, anger and rage. But, you know, if the song, but if the song has lyrics that'll grow on, that I like, it'll grow on me. So it remains to be seen if this will be something I continue to listen to.
Okay then. So let's move on to, somebody else writing a review. So I found an interesting article. I think it was probably through Twitter. It was by Vulture. Which, you know, that was probably the first indication that it wouldn't be that good. But it's called Why Man-Seeking Woman is One of TV's Most Underrated Comedies. And, you know, as we mentioned last year, or at the end of last year, what we give awards to always boils over into the next year. And, you know, I gave Man Seeking Woman the best TV comedy award from last year. And, of course, it's boiling over here. And Vulture, you know, actually is complimenting the show. But what I wanted to point out, and hopefully, Daniel, you can comment on this as well, is this one quote, which I actually sort of took offense to almost. This is a quote from the article. This is supposed to be something that's good about Man Seeking Woman. And unlike the How I Met Your Mothers of this world, Josh is the main character, assumption that the world owes him a girlfriend because he is the hero of the story is perpetually in question. Now, I find this offensive on a couple levels. One, I don't think the main character acts like the show owes him a girlfriend. I think he just wants one, which I find that offensive because, one, they're not watching the show to understand it. Two, I find it offensive on a narrative level because they clearly don't understand how you tell a story. What kind of a story, Man-Seeking Woman, would it be if the main character wasn't going after and trying to find a girlfriend? Isn't that in the name of it? And three, the fact that they're seeming to be insinuating that the guy shouldn't want to have a girlfriend and, like, he should just accept whether he has one or not. Like, that seems to be insulting towards men.
Yeah, so I would say that the most insulting part of this is that I think they are actually, I think they are applying a feminist interpretation to the show.
Yeah.
Which is, one, always bad, not because it is feminism, but because you shouldn't rely on critical theory for anything, because it makes you a weak-minded fool. Stop it. You should read from the evidence up, not from a theory down. That's generally bad. And I think they're taking pleasure in something that doesn't exist in the show. As you said, that the story is sort of his assumption that the world owes him a girlfriend is perpetually in question. I don't think it's perpetually in question. I think the entire point of the show is there's many absurdities to dating that both men and women have to go through that are barriers to actual relationships. I don't think it is in any way putting down the main character for those barriers. I think it is, you're supposed to feel some degree of pity for him that there are all these ridiculous things that he has to go through. So yeah, fuck you, Vulture, and your nonsense.
So you're saying that this whole idea that the world shouldn't owe him a girlfriend, you're saying that's a feminist interpretation?
Yes.
What do you think of the use of the word owe? Because that's my main question here. I mean, is it wrong to think the world owes you a girlfriend? Is that the wrong way of approaching it? Or are they really objecting to, him thinking he deserves a girlfriend?
Yes, that is what they're objecting to, and they're turning it into owes, which is necessarily in this context a patriarchal sort of, fiefdom kind of thing. Like, oh, I am owed a Prussian bride to stop this war with France. Like, that's all I can think of, by the way, is Prussia.
I haven't seen this show, but something I will say is I have seen dudes who think they're owed some attention from women. A lot of times when I go on an OkCupid date, the girl will actually show me messages they get from like the most psycho guy they've got. And a lot of times they have this like these really psycho guys who will like they'll start with the first message and then she doesn't respond because she's not interested. And then the second message will just be this long rant about how they're so rude that they didn't respond. And then all this shit that clearly explains like, oh yeah, you owe me attention basically. So something makes me wonder like if there's a half truth to this that, you know, that's where it comes from is like some guys do actually think they're owed attention.
And I'm not going to debate that at all. I mean, I think those people exist. Those people are in the world. And specifically in this show, that's not what's going on here.
Right.
I think they're applying that, and they're applying that idea of, you know, certain men believe they're owed a woman to all men believe they're owed a woman to this depiction of all men believes they're owed a woman. So that's why I called it a critical theory feminist analysis.
Right. So long story short, there's nothing wrong with thinking you deserve a girlfriend and pursuing that, and that's not what the show's about. The show is not, you know, I do agree that Ted on How I Met Your Mother is a whiny bitch. Josh is not a whiny bitch at all. He doesn't complain about what he goes through. He's just always kind of like, ah, come on, are you serious right now? Whereas Ted would be like, I don't deserve this. This is really bad. Oh, that's my impersonation of Ted. Let me be clear. Last couple of stories. So we have two different reactions here to the Oscars So White controversy that we've sort of been tracking a little bit. And one of them is where we got the episode title from. So the first thing is here is Oscar nominee Charlotte Rampling says diversity scandal is racist against white people.
Which what?
Shock and awe, shock and horror. And then the other is Will Smith saying to skip the Oscars. And his reasoning was diversity is the American superpower. To me, Will Smith's statement is like when people say diversity is the point of Star Trek. It comes out of nowhere and I'm like, I've never heard this before in my life. Where do you people get this?
Wasn't America's superpower the fact that it was the first federal constitutional republic that protected individual rights? I thought that was America's superpower, but...
I don't know. We did free black people.
Eventually. Yeah. I don't know if diversity... There was actually a panel... I keep bringing it back to my job. Usually I bring everything back to Adam Carolla, but I've been... working a lot lately. So there's a panel at a conference in New York we did about the history of multiculturalism in America. And actually one of the things that was pointed out is, cause one of the leftists on the panel pointed out that like e pluribus unum, like out of many one is, he claimed was like this huge statement on diversity. But actually if you look into like the history of it, the idea was that yes, you would bring in the diversity of certain ideologies, but then they would mold them into a new American ideology that was unique to America. And it wasn't, the focus wasn't supposed to be on the first part of the sentence, like out of many, the focus was supposed to be on the second part, creating one. So not dividing, not thinking about ourselves as a division, but thinking about ourselves as an American unit. Anyway, that was a bit of a tangent, but, Will Smith, you haven't done anything great since, what was that thing you were in? Ali. So, let's not talk about diversity. Let's talk about getting you some acting lessons.
Wow. All right. What about Charlotte Rampling? Is it racist against white people?
Well, didn't we mention last week that just the concept of putting people of like you're white people and you're black people completely misses that there are many ethnicities within white and black?
Yeah, I just like to bring this point up over and over again.
Like. Yeah, there were Italians nominated and Irish nominated, and there were probably people from French Canadian nominated. Like, it's wildly racist to say that because it's white people, it's racist. Like,
number one, that kind of miss the point that racism makes is like racism does kind of see all white people as the same, even the white racists and the black racists. Like that's the division they end up making. So that's the way the issue is cast.
I'm not sure. Like if you talk to a Ku Klux Klan member, some of them still hate Catholics and Irish.
That's true.
And certainly Jews.
Yeah, I was gonna say.
The actual hardcore racists are pretty fucking hardcore about it. Like,
right, they know what they, but the thing is, of course it's racist because it, and she's probably noticing this on some level, of course it's racist because to make everything about race is racist, you know, to try and find these sorts of divisions where they don't exist. It's still the same collectivistic thinking, only they're on the side of black people and not white people. So she's right.
Right, and that's the ultimate word there you just said that I was waiting for you to say is collectivism. That's what it boils down to, is racism is just another form of collectivism.
Yeah.
Very clearly.
And it's easy to see how sort of a, a way this you know preoccupation with race has made a lot of black people and perhaps the other minority groups implicitly racist. You know, if you call a white dude a cracker, that's supposed to be a slur against his race. He's just going to be like, okay, like whatever. You call a black person a nigger, that you haven't just insulted him, like you've insulted his whole race, and for some reason that's a big deal. You know, another way to think of it, which is a bigger deal, or is it supposed to be a big deal? If you go up to a black person, you say you're a brainless shithead. That seems like a pretty bad insult, right? But if you call him a nigger, game is up. You're dead. You know, because why? You didn't insult him. You insulted his race, and that's what really counts. And that's the collectivism there. It's the race that counts, not me in my mind.
Yeah, that's tremendous, tremendously well stated. I'll say something less profound. That the Hollywood Reporter published a letter from Mark Rina, who's a member of the Academy's executive branch, and he's been a voting member of the Academy for a very long time.
Was there a response from the judicial and legislative branches?
No, there was not, because there aren't those things for this. But well played, sir. No, his whole thing is about the absurdity of making this more diverse, and basically the idea that they're batting around is taking away maybe half voting rights from people and allowing the Academy to weigh in for 50%.
Wait. So their answer to racism is to have people's votes count half?
Yes, basically.
Dude, I think it should be 3/5.
Yes.
We're going to really be historically accurate here.
But the problem is that for Mark Rina, he is a Latino and gay. And so he basically says at the end of his letter, please explain to me how denying me my right to vote makes the Academy membership and the Oscar nominees more diverse. And it's become – I point this out not because I want to use this sort of token person gotcha game, but because this is what social justice does to itself, which is another theme we've talked about, which is social justice will eat itself eventually, because there's no way to get around this competing interests of I'm the more oppressed person. And it becomes a giant circle jerk of who is more oppressed and who deserves more rights and who deserves more power because they're oppressed.
Right, it's
and
a backwards like I said, way of getting to individualism.
Exactly. I said hopefully it will end up at we're all fucking individuals again. But,
right, that's the only place it can go.
I really doubt that. But that reminds me of my friend Neve. He does sketch comedy in LA. Mm-hmm. And he wrote this skit that's absolutely amazing. It's first there's this white woman and she says to this man like, oh, what you're saying is sexist. And then this Hispanic woman says, hey, shut the fuck up. You have way more privilege than me because you're white. And then a Palestinian woman also in the room says, hey, shut the fuck up. You have way more privilege than me because I'm Palestinian. And then a transgender black dude comes in and says, hey, both of you shut the fuck up because I'm transgendered. And then finally, there's this dude rolls into a wheelchair. Half of him's dressed as a woman. Half of him's dressed as a man. Everyone's like, oh no, it's the gender fluid retard. He has the most privilege of all of us. And so they award him with a crown and say, only he speaks objective truth because he's the least privileged of us all.
That's
absolutely brilliant skit.
Yeah, that's similar to that video by, the Indian guy from Australia or New Zealand. Do you know the one I'm talking about, Daniel? Where the guy goes to school and then he gets kicked out because he's being too privileged.
Yes, yeah. Indeed. I like that. Yeah, you know, this is so funny that all these things come back around. I actually wrote a column in college about basically, you know, finding the most oppressed minority on campus, and we basically chose this guy who was gay, half Latino, handicapped, one quarter French Canadian, one quarter Aboriginal something or other, and basically anointed him the most oppressed minority. We didn't have the term privilege back then, but we appointed him the most oppressed person on campus. as sort of a joke.
And you know where oppressed people usually hang out on the internet and they're no longer oppressed?
Oh God.
Reddit. So let's end this episode. Let's do some Reddit on Reddit.
Sony stupid, Xbox lame, PC gaming all the way, EA glow, Steam rocks, got risk for my Firefox. These things are all on Reddit. Mostly pics of felines, comma boring felines. These things are all on Reddit. No, we didn't post it, but we will repost it.
First Reddit. You are granted one superpower, but if anybody finds out that you have it, you die. What power do you wish for?
The power to make people forget things? No.
I was going to say mind reading, because that you can do just surreptitiously. Well, the problem with your power, Daniel, is there's no upside. There's no downside, but there's no upside either. Although, there's some upside, actually, yeah. But no, I would go with mind reading, for sure.
I can think of things like, forget that you want to run for president, Donald Trump. What the hell am I doing? Yeah. Exactly. But also, if someone found out about my power, I could immediately make them forget it. Do you see what I was getting at? I was playing into the premise of the question.
Yes.
Like I want to do. Invisibility is a good one, I guess.
What if someone catches you in the act of becoming invisible?
Well, I could just make them think they're crazy.
Right.
There are some epistemological things to this question that I don't like. But also, isn't it some sort of superpower to make people stop having a superpower? Like, that's not very fair. Basically what I'm saying is you picked a shitty question. And I will never forgive you for it. So,
Justin, what's your answer to the shitty question?
AIDS.
AIDS!
Isn't that what they're describing here?
Like, if they find out you have it, you die. No, they die.
Isn't that what happened? What? Whenever you find out someone has AIDS, they're like dead like a month later?
Not since the 80s, I think. Or the early 90s, right. But
we'll send this podcast back in a time capsule. So that
sorry, Freddie Mercury.
Alright, next Reddit.
Everyone has AIDS. Dun, 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 dun.
AIDS.
What would you do with your life if you didn't have to work and got $50K from the government each year?
Nothing. Like, basically vegetate and lose brain cells and eventually be in a heaping pile of horribly low self-esteem and kill myself.
That's great. Yeah, because who needs productivity? That's not like a virtue or anything, right?
I know. I didn't read the Reddit thread on this. One, because I've stopped doing it because it makes me hate all of life and the world. But I hope that people were not taking this as a positive thing. Like, oh, wouldn't it be great if we could all do nothing and get 50K for the year from the government? Because also, who's paying for this shit? If no one is working and everyone's getting 50K from the government, where is this money coming from?
Yeah, this is dangerously close to a premise of a story I came up with.
Is this all the Obama money that we were promised finally being doled out to the rest of us? Because Harrity is going to pay for my mortgage, or at least my cell phone.
Well, and that's the other thing, too, that I think people did point out on Reddit. 50K, I mean, I'm not going to spit at it if you give me 50K, but ideally, I would like to be making more than 50K a year.
Yeah, right? I was going to say, like, wait, I could imagine a lot more than 50K.
I mean, it also depends on where you live. Like, 50K in South Carolina is going to go a lot more than 50K in Southern California.
Yeah.
50K in South Carolina, you can run for governor.
Yeah, it's true. Believe me, I thought about that. I was like, man, if I made like 50K here, I'd be fucking rich.
God, you'd have so much disposable income. Pay for rent years in advance.
So basically the summary we have here is you would keep working, right? And keep doing the things you love because it doesn't matter how much money you have, you're just going to keep working. I mean, one of the things I always say is, I don't ever see myself retiring. like, the concept of retiring is foreign to me. Like, there's going to be a certain point in my life that I'm just going to be like, fuck it, I don't want to work anymore. What else would I do with my life?
Yeah. Well, you'd travel to, like, Barbados and shit. That's what retired people do, right?
Yeah, but I would get bored. Like, cool. Like, I like going to, you know, the Caribbean, too. I like hanging out on the beach, too. But after, like, a week, I'm fucking bored and want to, like, do shit.
You'd go to Branson and go to and attend Eminem concerts. Because that's who's going to be playing Branson when we're old. You realize that, right?
He's not going to even be in Vegas?
No, Branson.
What's in Branson? Why are you naming Branson?
You don't know that Branson, Missouri is like where all the old people go?
No.
Okay, Google that shit. It'll be hysterical for you. The average age of the visitor to Branson is at like 130.
The average.
Yes.
Okay, I love how we got
here. Half of them
are
160.
Yeah, at least. Yeah.
All right. Ready for the last Reddit?
Yeah.
Please.
What was the most damaging thing a parent said to you when you were growing up?
Jesus. Way to end on a high note.
Yeah, yeah, seriously.
I like to do one deeply personal one.
God damn. Well, I have an easy answer for this, which is, I don't know if it's something specific that was said, but whenever I showed any interest in a woman, well, at that time, I guess it'd be a girl, because when I was young, I was basically...
Or as Britney Spears says, not a girl, not yet a woman.
Yes, there you go. Perfect. I didn't know Britney Spears was such the fucking Longfellow.
Well, somebody else probably wrote that for her.
Yeah, probably Longfellow, in fact. He's dead. But whenever I showed any interest in the opposite sex, my family would tease me mercilessly. Just relentlessly tease me. Until basically I just said, fuck it. I'm just not going to do this because I don't want the pain associated with showing interest in a girl. And that royally screwed me up in the dating scene.
Yeah, they did that to me too, actually.
And that is just something I vowed I will not do to my children. I mean, there were other things that screwed me up, but I think that was the one thing that, like, anytime I thought about showing interest in a girl, all I could remember is just being teased mercilessly, about it. And that was no good. So. Yeah. Well, shots.
So for me, probably the worst thing I was told, it didn't actually damage me because I didn't believe it, was you have to do this because I say so. And I was pretty stubborn and I wasn't affected by that one. But like if I would have been, that would have been the worst. The one that I actually believed was kind of not a specific thing. Again, not a specific thing that was said, but like, a lot of times I was like blamed for stuff that I couldn't actually help. Like basically, I don't think my parents understood that, like, you know, children don't know things and that, you know, you have to learn things step by step. So whenever I made any kind of mistake, I was punished for it as though I had like purposely evaded. And so like that's still with me till this day where I blame myself, like kind of like Jack Bauer, like I just, anything that goes wrong, I blame myself for, like, oh, if I'd only known this, like, well, how the hell was I supposed to know that? You know? So I still haven't like, figured out how to eject that premise from my subconscious.
Yeah, that's
that
a good
always
one.
At fault.
Justin?
This is an example, but I think it carries over into many fields. And the example is, quote, we're not artists. That's what I was told when I was very young, like elementary school. And that was in reference to my family. And for me, personally, as an artist, it's actually only been recently that I've even conceptualized myself as an artist and realized that I have that different personality and differing brain. And to realize that means my life's going to be different from the rest of my family. And I'm going to live differently than a lot of people. And to be told that at a young age, that affects your identity. And to be told over and over again when what you're not and what you are, when that should be something you determine yourself. That shouldn't be something somebody else tells you. I think it's very damaging for a parent to tell a child things like that rather than encouraging them to develop what they want to be and what they're interested in.
That statement is like directly out of the 1400s. Like your fucking last name was Cobbler. And you were like, but I want to be a butcher. It's like, no, we're fucking cobblers. You better like Justin, shoes.
You're not an artist. You're a sister.
Technically, my name means of the forest, so I don't know what I would be.
You're a huntsman.
you're a lumberjack.
Why are you doing art when you should be lumberjack. Out there cutting down trees?
You can scamper up and get all the branches off.
Oh wow! Thanks.
Oh my god, that's so dumb.
I had a girlfriend who I would help her with math, and she told me that her dad would always tell her how bad she was at math. And she said, her dad said to her, you should just wait outside UCLA and hope that some dude who some dude who's going to make a lot of money when he grows up marries you. And I said,
because math is the only way to make money.
I guess. Yeah. And so I said where's your dad lived? She's like, oh, Florida. I'm like, okay, I'm going to drive down there and punch him in the face.
I could always sneak up on him with a knife.
Do they ask that in any job interview? They're like, when they get to the end and they're determining your salary and they're like, so just so we know, before we decide what we're going to pay you, are you good at math? No, I am not
exactly.
Good at math. Oh, you made 20K less.
Well, Justin, this may be alien to you in your artistic world, but math does actually have something to do with the world, and it does help for many things.
Not with Justin's job and barely with mine.
Wait. So you're telling me when they say they're going to pay me 10 an hour, that's less than 20 an hour? Because I thought they were the same.
There are actually maths far more advanced than this that will help you with other problems.
Wait until you discover the world of multiplication.
Well,
fucking blow your mind.
So if I multiply 10 by 40, I can figure out how much I make in a week?
Yeah, right.
Oh, I hope not.
But can you take the natural log of how much you make?
Now you're speaking.
Nothing.
I'm from the forest. I get the log from the forest.
It's a natural log.
Basically gibberish.
Isn't the natural log what I'm going to dump in the toilet after I get done here?
I make that joke every time when it comes up in math class, and no one has ever found it funny. I'm serious.
I find it funny. All right, let's wrap this episode up. Let's put a bow on it. What did we learn this week? Daniel?
I learned that giant snow penises are art too.
James? I learned, when someone has this sorry for existing sort of attitude, I should try and help them rather than just ridiculing them for having that attitude. Even though it's wrong, try to help them unseat that premise instead
of... Just tell them you are not good at math.
Yeah, that's what I'll tell them.
Yeah. Justin, what did you learn this week?
That apparently I'm a squirrel. I'm meant to go up trees and take down all the branches.
And also stuff a lot of nuts in your mouth.
No.
Oh, we had to throw some gay comments in. We're missing Elliot for that little tidbit there. So if you learned something, why don't you go over to the iTunes and tell us with a 5-star review. Why a 5-star review? Because we deserve it. You just give us a 5-star review.
Yeah, we think the world owes us 5-star reviews, Vulture.
That's right. You can give us other stars, but why? 5's right there. You were going to give us 4. So if you literally move your mouse a millimeter over to the 5, it's right there.
By the way, I want to tell a brief story about 4 versus 5 stars. So I manage the social media for the company I work for, the Facebook page, and we don't have many followers because it's a very small company. But one of the people who likes the articles every day is one of the manager's wives. And the other day, she decided to rate us on Facebook. And for some reason, she rated us 4 out of 5 stars. And I was like, why would she do that? And the only explanation my brain would come up with, and I was like, they must have had an argument in bed last night. And she was like, don't push me. Don't push me or I will rate your company 4 out of 5 stars on Facebook.
Oh, God. Yeah, that's a low self-esteem bitch right there. So, we don't want 4. We don't want to be low self-esteem bitches. We want 5. 5 stars on iTunes. Do you know why that helps us? Because I say this every week, but in reality, that helps us because every time we get another review with 5 stars, we get bumped up just a little bit in the search results. And right now, we're pretty far behind Welcome to Night Vale, whatever the fuck that is. And when you type in welcome to, we want the first thing to be the midside. Yes, the midside. Of course, you can also help us by going to facebook.com/themidside, click the little thumbs up button if you like us. Or you can go to twitter.com/themidside, click the little follow thing so the little birdie tweets our tweets at you. Or if you're feeling particularly generous, like several of our listeners have been, you can go to patreon.com, that's patreon.com/themidside, and sign up to give us a few shekels every time we do a podcast. So every time we produce a piece of content, it deducts $1, $2, 25 cents, 350K from
pound
your bank account. We'll take anything at this point. Half a pound of flesh. We're not greedy. So, yeah, that's the way you can help us. Also, tell a friend. We love when you tell friends.
Give us a pound of flesh.
We love us when you tell enemies. That's what your girlfriend says. Give me that pound of flesh.
Give us a pound of flesh. Don't be shy, Locke.
Hilarious.
Oh my God.
Oh God. That's enough shilling for this week.
That was a good one. I'm Justin M. Wisniewski, and I hope you learned something this week. This concludes your journey into the midside. Good luck out there, and remember, if things get tough, take a step back and witness the farce.
Day! I didn't hear a difference between you talking quietly and normally.
Well, what matters, what matters is the levels I'm seeing through the recorder, not what you hear, James. I mean, I know you're from California, so you think what matters most is what you hear, but. All right. Give me 20.
I have, what?
It's like, I know you're a narcissist, but it's not your fault.